Welcome to PFW's Chicago Football Podcast. Headed into week two of the Chicago Bears 2016 season, their home opener on Monday night against the Philadelphia Eagles. I'm your host, Kevin Fishbane, joined today by my producer, John Solly. Dan Mott is off today. We're going to quickly as possible, recap Bears-Texans and then go right into Bears-Eagles. Today's Behind Enemy Lines guest from Philadelphia is Jimmy Kemsky, who breaks down the Eagles for us. Let's remind you where to find all our great coverage, of course, online at profootballweekly.com/Bears, on Twitter at Bears_Insider. Also, add us on Snapchat, Bears_Insider. I am at K Fishbane on Twitter. He is at J Solly. And John, before we talk about Bears Texans, how was Bears Insider Snapchat from Houston?
It was fire emoji. I really enjoyed your snaps. You should be adding us on Snapchat because there's great behind the scenes stuff, great stuff that you're not going to get anywhere else, frankly.
And apologies if sometimes there are what I like to call snap gaps, which are gaps within your Snapchat story. Because to be frank and to be honest with my listeners, because I'm nothing if not honest, sometimes I forget about Snapchat. I'll get there and I'll snap. And then the game's going on. And then suddenly at halftime, I go, Bears are losing. It's halftime.
Well, but I think that's okay. People are looking for the behind the scenes stuff before the game, but then we're all watching the game. So I think that's fine.
How about this? Here's how you enjoy a game with us, okay, if you're not, like, sitting next to me, which would be a fun thing to raffle off if we had that kind of power. So just follow on Snapchat before the game, then head to your Twitter and follow on Twitter during the game, and then go back to Snapchat after the game.
Exactly. You get the mix of the visuals and the analysis. It's like you're right there with Kevin Fishbane.
Yeah, which is something that no one has really wanted to ever be, aside from my own family members. But hopefully enough of you enjoy our coverage of the Chicago Bears, who are 0-1 after their 23-14 loss to the Houston Texans. It was it wasn't a weird game. It was kind of a predictable game. I mean, the Bears had the two great offensive drives where Alshon Jeffrey was unstoppable. The defense had a few stops. And then by the second half, I think the Texans defense kind of figured out some things, ran some more stunts and messed with the Bears offensive line that was had just been playing together for only 6 days. Brock Osweiler made a couple of good throws, and that was the ball game. I mean, it was one of those things, John, where I walked away thinking, okay, what did we learn about the Bears after this game? And I kind of thought, unfortunately, not a ton, because we know what Alshon Jeffrey's capable of. We know this defense is going to be better than last year, and I think they showed it at times. I think we'll see more and more of it, which gets me kind of looking forward to week two, because I think we'll learn more about the Bears after they play a team that is closer to their level in the Eagles. But let's backtrack. The one big takeaway, of course, was Kevin White, who only had 2 catches in the day. Of course, everyone talking about the route.
Looked a little lost out there.
Yeah, he didn't complete the route on Jay Cutler's interception, and that kind of turned the game on a dime a little bit. Although I was surprised they didn't run the ball as much as they kind of kept talking about they would. I mean, they were technically in the lead all the way to the beginning of the fourth quarter. But it never felt like that, though. It didn't. And I think, you're the road team, you're the underdog. You're playing a Texans defense with those many stars. I agree with you. But the Kevin White thing, as an observer, John, where's your concern level? And then I'll tell you, I guess, from my objective point of view, where I think it should be.
My concern was that he didn't know where he was supposed to go, which is in line kind of what we thought about Kevin White when he was drafted, and that he only, of the 9 routes on the route tree, he really only understood 2 or 3 of them. Really only ran about 2 of them at West Virginia. I thought that he would be a little bit better at understanding routes at this point, even though he hadn't been on the field. Clearly, he has work to go on that. But I'm not going to judge a guy based on 1 game out there, especially on the road against a great defense. So I think when we start talking about this, maybe week 7, week 8, he's got half a season under his belt, and he's still running the wrong routes and not where he's supposed to be, and then further complicating it by kind of loafing after the interception. He didn't really go back and try to make the tackle and try to make up for that play. That was a little concerning for me, but again, it's one game. It's his first game. I'm not overly concerned, but I'm a little concerned at this point.
Yeah, I think the hype train was moving pretty quickly from the tracks, and as much as that Chiefs preseason game should have brought it down a bit, I think people – look, you know, I was on with the Tay and Jay show in Champaign, great guys out there, and Jeremy Werner, the host, was saying, you know, you look as a fan – for things to be excited about, and you kind of start with Kevin White, because that is a wide receiver who was a number 7 pick who did not play his rookie year. So I understand the frustration when that was the guy everyone was kind of looking forward to seeing. And not even just the route. I thought there were two balls that maybe weren't perfect throws from Jay Cutler, but the plays that you expect Kevin White to catch those passes. So but I agree with you. I think everyone's got to be patient, and when you're a rookie with as raw as Kevin White, you are going to take your lumps. And look, maybe it's Monday night. Maybe it's week 3. Who knows? There's going to be a game he lights it up and reminds everyone why he was a number 7 pick. Of course, if there isn't a game in which he lights it up, then you can really sound the sirens. But I encourage folks to pick up your Thursday Sun-Times, Daily Herald, Northwest Herald in our little Pro Football Weekly insert. A friend of the program, Pat Finley, and I had a take to about Kevin White. The other player, John, that I think everyone was looking forward to seeing was Leonard Floyd. I thought he obviously flashed when he got the sack. I thought he made a couple plays, run stops in pursuit. John Fox admitted Floyd was probably out there a little more than they would have liked, but I don't know about you. I was surprised when I checked the snap count the next day that not only had he was he on the field more than any other outside linebacker, he was in the field 12 more snaps than Willie Young, which is a lot for somebody that Vic Fangio told us last week had a quote-unquote choppy preseason.
Actually, I want to go back to White for a second, because defenses, I think, are going to understand, okay, we need to roll coverage over on Alshon, because that's kind of the Bears, that's their one weapon in the pass game right now. So there's going to be a couple of weeks where defenses are going to basically say, okay, Kevin White, beat us, right? Like at some point that's going to happen.
Yes, and that's the situation where Dow Loggins and Jay Cutler can put Kevin White in those favorable positions. And I would expect some screens maybe. Just like, you know, the type of things he did at West Virginia, get him the ball in the open field and let him work from there. Maybe simple it up a little bit just to get him a couple catches, get that confidence going.
Okay, and then back to Floyd. Yeah, I was shocked at the number of snaps that Floyd saw. I did not expect that. I don't think Floyd is that much better at this point than Willie Young or Lamar Houston. I think in terms of giving your team the best chance to win, I think Floyd shouldn't be number one in snaps, right?
Yeah, probably not. I will say this, though. I mean, did you notice Willie Young or Lamar Houston much during the game on Sunday?
I did not, and I did notice Floyd a little bit more, but that was either because he was making a great play or he was just getting swallowed up.
Yeah, I think this is going to continue to be a rotation. And, you know, the one thing, too, is I thought the defense got better in the second half. I thought Eddie Goldman played really well in the second half. Akeem Hicks, too. You know, they really shut down Lamar Miller after halftime. The problem was timing. The Bears were on the field for so long on defense, and they gave up a couple of the big third down plays. And, John, I think we've talked about the Texans game too much already. It's over.
Let's move on.
Let's move on. Let's talk Eagles, and let's jump right into it. We're going to go behind enemy lines right now to talk about the Bears' home opening opponent, the Philadelphia Eagles. We'll talk about their new head coach, Doug Peterson, their rookie quarterback, Carson Wentz, and I get educated a little bit on who is on that defense besides Fletcher Cox. This is my interview now, talking Bears-Eagles. To preview Bears-Eagles, we now bring in Jimmy Kemsky, Eagles writer for Philly Voice. Go ahead and follow him on Twitter, at Jimmy Kemsky. And Jim, before we even get to Bears-Eagles, as a NFL beat writer, I do have to thank you for all the work you put in every Labor Day, telling us which team is the oldest and which team is the youngest in the NFL.
You're welcome. I appreciate that.
And I hope you get enough credit. I make sure I very clearly link it to your page. I'm sure you get a lot of people who just say it in this day and age. But I do like that one of the fun parts about it is the Rams continue to be the youngest. And as we saw on Monday night, they continue to be a bad football team.
Yeah, it's kind of funny every year. And it's been every year for the last 5 years. So whenever I do that study, I put where they ranked in 2015, 14, 13, 12. I think it goes back to 2011. And every year I've done it, they're the youngest team in the NFL. And that includes a league where you have a team like the Cleveland Browns, who the Eagles, of course, played week one, who have 17 rookies on their roster, and somehow that team is still not even young as the Rams.
It's amazing, but they seem destined to maybe they'll go down to 6-10 this year. The Rams, we'll wait and see. All right, let's talk about the Eagles, Bears, Eagles Monday Night Football. Before we get into kind of how they played against the Browns in this game, from a journalist perspective, what's been the difference for you covering Doug Peterson versus Chip Kelly?
Chip was always good, or at least early in his tenure in Philly. He was really good for funny quotes. And then, you know, as his 3-year tenure kind of carried along, he got a little more and more surly with the Eagles media. And of course that was also partly due in part because his success, winning games kind of went down from year one to year two and certainly into year three. So, yeah, I mean, he was always very, very polite to me personally. I know that some other guys in the media had, you know, their issues with him. And it was actually a little surprising that he was polite to me because I kept writing, especially his last year, that he probably shouldn't be coaching in the NFL anymore. And he was always still very polite to me. And I had no problem with him whatsoever personally in terms of covering him. But he was, especially early on in his tenure, I mean, just what he, like all the different initiatives that he was bringing with the sports science and all the hurry up stuff and the extreme pace that they run their practices. There was certainly, you know, a lot of different things to cover and it was unique and different. So it was very fun covering for those 3 years. But, you know, as we transition here into Doug Peterson, it's almost kind of like you're covering, you know, Andy Reid Jr., which, of course, Andy Reid was the coach before Chip Kelly. And he's bringing a lot of the same things back that Andy Reid used to do. So, you know, it's not like a totally new learning experience covering Doug, because you know a lot of the things like I said that he's doing are basically the same as what Andy did. But Doug is he's an interesting cat in his own right. And that he's, you know, I don't want to call him dopey, but you know he wasn't great initially in his press conferences in terms of you know just kind of giving crisp answers. He got a lot better since he was first hired. But I thought he did a tremendous job week one with the way the Eagles came out and played, and his play calling was very good, and he mixed it up. I thought he's using his players, his offensive skill players, the way that they should be used, which is something that Chip didn't do. So, I've been impressed so far with what he's actually done on the football field so far.
Yeah, and let's see the first time they're in a close game if he takes some of Andy Reid's time management skills to the field and timeout usage. Maybe we'll see that on Monday night. We got to talk, of course, about Carson Wentz. I went back and watched some of that Eagles-Browns game. You obviously were there covering it. What impressed you most about his NFL debut?
Just everything he did, from a poise and confidence and you know, kind of getting everyone to believe in perspective. I mean, to look at him in practice, and he's actually a player that I initially previewed back in like December, because it was obvious the Eagles were going to draft a quarterback. It was only a matter of when and who. So I kind of previewed about 15 different quarterbacks, and he was my favorite by the time we left for the draft. And I take my initial look at him in December. I watched him closely at the Senior Bowl practices. I watched him closely at the combine. And then, you know, certainly I saw him all throughout mini camp, OTAs and training camp. And, you know, the things that stand out are he's big. First of all, he's 6'5", he's 240. He's got a strong arm. He's mobile. He can get out and run if he needs to. So everything from the physical perspective is there. I mean, the one thing where, you know, maybe there's a little bit of a knock on him with the, you know, he can be inaccurate at times or he's not setting his feet, but for the most part, I do think he's accurate, and that's only going to improve. So physically, I think he has everything that you want in a quarterback. And then his smarts are kind of off the charts, as the Eagles like to say. I mean, he had a 40 on the Wunderlich, which, you know, you can take that for what it's worth, to a 4.0 GPA at North Dakota State. And like I said, the Eagles coaches just rave about how smart he is, and it showed on the field in that first game. He's moving guys around. He's getting guys lined up. We're talking about 10-year veterans that he's getting lined up in the formation. And he's moving Darren Sproles around. Sproles has been around forever. He's, you know, there's one instance where he was running a hurry-up offense at the end of the first half, and he's getting guys lined up. He's getting guys up to the line of scrimmage. He's making checks at the line. There's one play where, you know, he read a blitz. He checked out of a play. He was under center. He moved in the shotgun, and he realized it was going to be mad coverage. He caught Jordan Matthews over the middle for what was, you know, pretty easy throw, but it was really kind of set up by his pre-snap adjustment. So just in terms of his smarts and his ability to read defenses already and get guys lined up where they have to go, I mean, he's way, way beyond where he should be in terms of a rookie playing his first game in the NFL. So he's really impressed me that way.
Yeah, for sure. Talking to Jimmy Kemsky, Eagles writer for Philly Voice. And Jimmy, I'm sure it also helps Carson to have that offensive line. And when I'm looking at this Bears-Eagles matchup, and again, kind of taking a layman's view at it, if you just look at the names of the players and you see Jason Peters and Lane Johnson and Brandon Brooks, it looks like that offensive line is a strength. Is that kind of a fair evaluation? Is that kind of where the Eagles can kind of gain an edge when you look at what that offensive line can do?
Yeah, heading into the season, Lane Johnson was potentially going to be suspended. And it's just a weird situation there in that he hasn't been yet. And had he been suspended, it really changes their offensive line big time in that they would have had to have moved their left guard, Alan Barber, out to right tackle. And then they would have either inserted Stefan Wisniewski, who was a free agent pickup this offseason, or Isaac Seumalo, a rookie, in at left guard. And had they had to have done that, there wouldn't have been any offensive lineman in that starting lineup who had played a single NFL snap to the guy immediately to their left or right. So, you know, had Lane Johnson been missing, he would have had, you know, literally no continuity whatsoever along that offensive line. So it's been a big help, I think, in that first game anyway, especially with a rookie quarterback that Johnson has not yet been suspended and he can stay there at right tackle. But you're right. I mean, they do have some good personnel, though. Jason Peters can still play. He's 34 years old. He's going to be 35 in January, so he's one of the oldest players in the NFL. Lane Johnson is an extremely athletic right tackle on the other side, so those guys are very good bookends. At center, you have another really athletic guy, Jason Kelce, who really had a down year last year. I thought he was a little bit better in the first game, week one. And then, as you mentioned, they have Brandon Brooks, who they brought in as a free agent playing right guard, and Alan Barber, who's an okay starter at left guard. So, yeah, all in all, it's a fairly strong offensive line, assuming they can stay healthy and as long as Lane Johnson is suspended.
Looking to the other side of the ball, you talked about the Eagles being able to get some continuity on that offensive line. That's something the Bears have struggled to have this year, and we saw it with what the Houston Texans did to them last week. And I feel like the Eagles with Fletcher Cox and Connor Barwin and Brandon Graham can do similar things, obviously a different scheme, but can do similar things and gain after the quarterback with the front four. And I imagine part of that game plan for the Eagles is to get after Jay Cutler with those guys. What is it about, you know, Jim Schwartz's defense and using those guys that can maybe come into play on Monday night at Soldier Field?
Yeah, it's so important for the Eagles to have good personnel along their front four, specifically the front four as opposed to the front seven, because they want to be able to get to the quarterback with just those front four guys so they can, you know, kind of drop seven guys in the coverage. And it just makes, you know, a world of difference if you can get to the quarterback with those front four. And early in the game against the Browns, they actually struggled. The RG3 really had a lot of time to throw, and the Eagles just weren't getting home. And then as the game progressed, they did a much better job getting to the quarterback. And part of that, the Eagles defensive linemen themselves kind of said after the game that the rotation that they use along the defensive line was helpful in that regard, and that they were fresh in the third and fourth quarters. They'll actually rotate eight different guys along that defensive line, and they're really deep there. Fletcher Cox is an absolute stud. He's one of the best interior defenders in the NFL, and just really kind of an impossible guy to block for an offensive guard. So you can get him lined up one-on-one against the guard. More often than not, he's going to win that battle both as a pass rusher and in the run game. So he kind of really sets the tone for that defensive line. And then, you know, on the edges, they don't really have that one stud pass rusher that, you know, that you just have to make sure you're accounting for on every single play and make sure you know where he is. Like for example, J.J. Watt. They don't have one of those guys. Although, you know, J.J. Watt, they kind of line him up everywhere, inside, outside. But people don't really have that stud edge rusher like a Von Miller or something like that. But they do have three guys who have, you know, some success in the NFL getting to the quarterback, and Connor Barwin and Brandon Graham and Vinny Curry, that they've all proven that they can do it and they can get there. So certainly the depth and the rotation with those three guys and some others, it can kind of wear teams down as the game progresses. But it's a good front four, not a great front four, but with one great player in Fletcher Cox.
Now, in a past life, Jimmy, I used to cover the AFC East at Pro Football Weekly. And so this is like 2010 and 2012. So I look at the Eagles' back seven, and I'm seeing a lot of mid-round draft picks from teams I used to cover, like Nolan Carroll and Ron Brooks and Nigel Bradham at linebacker, and Leotis McKelvin, who had been at the Buffalo for a while. So is it safe to say that they don't really have necessarily that star in the back seven, that maybe known playmaker, or is there a guy that general fans might not know about but kind of works in this scheme? Because, again, looking at this matchup very simply, there's a lot of speed in that secondary, and there's some players in the middle of the field, but I feel like that's where the Bears are going to try to attack.
They do have one star in the backfield, and that's Malcolm Jenkins, who, in my view, is one of the most underrated players in the NFL, and also, in my view, is the second best player on the team behind Fletcher Cox. I mean, that's a guy who can just basically do everything. He can cover guys man-to-man, one-on-one in the slot. He can play center field. He's excellent in run support, and he just makes plays. And the only real knock on him is that he drops a lot of interceptions. If he just hold on to some more footballs, you'd be talking about him in the same way that people kind of talk about Ed Reed. I mean, that's how often this guy gets his hands on the ball, and it's how often he makes plays just without, you know, completely finishing the play. So he's really just an outstanding safety, in my view, you know, one of the top five or six safeties in the NFL. And then they signed a guy in free agency in Rodney McLeod, who came over from the Rams, who's a little bit undersized but has good speed and is willing to kind of stick his nose in there and thump people. So I think the Eagles kind of have one of the better safety duos in the NFL. And some of the guys that you mentioned that came over from the AFC, and Nigel Bradham and Leotis McKelvin and Ron Brooks, you know, they're all former Jim Schwartz players. So Jim Schwartz was the defensive coordinator for the Buffalo Bills in 2014. And as it happens, all three of those guys kind of had their best seasons in 2014 when they played for Schwartz. So, you know, there are three guys that Schwartz is comfortable with. You know, I don't think any of the three are world beaters by any stretch, but, you know, there are three guys that I think Schwartz wanted to bring in to kind of get his defense up and running. And so it made sense for them to sign those guys, but they're kind of role players. I mean, McKelvin's probably going to miss this game. I forget exactly what his injury was, but he's almost certainly going to miss this game against the Bears. So the Eagles kind of have a little bit of a depth issue at their corner spot, because they also just traded their 2015 second round pick, Eric Rowe, to the Patriots for a fourth round pick. They can become a three. So they're without him. They're going to have to possibly play Jalen Mills, who is a rookie seventh round pick, had a very good training camp initially, kind of tailed off toward the end of camp, but had some troubles in the preseason. So for sure, if he has to play, the Bears are really going to test him. I would imagine that they're going to try to get matchups with him against Alshon Jeffrey.
Yeah, absolutely. So that'll be, you know, that's something the Bears were able to get going in the first half last week against Houston, but not so much in the second half. Last question for you, Jimmy. For those who do follow you on Twitter, you put out some really good cartoons. How do you describe them, at least for our listeners?
I would say they're mostly poorly drawn, and they're done in MS Paint.
Okay. Well, so my question for you is, do you have a Jay Cutler one ready, or one that you can use or are planning to use for Monday night's game?
I don't. I normally don't kind of pre-draw anything, but as the game goes on, if, you know, Cutler does something funny or ridiculous or whatever, then, you know, you never know. But no, I don't typically head into the games with something I already pre-drawn.
Well, just going inside the artist's mind here, Jimmy, just trying to
completely understood.
Go behind the easel of sorts. So, anyways, for Bears fans, again, wanting to know more about the Eagles, and maybe you'll see some good cartoons during the game of Monday night, go ahead and give Jimmy a follow on Twitter at Jimmy Kemsky. Jimmy, I'm not going to ask you a pick because we're recording this pretty early in the week, but just in general, or, you know, what do you kind of see? How do you kind of see this game going on Monday night?
Yeah, I hadn't looked at the Bears yet. I haven't looked at their first game against the Texans yet, so I don't really have a great feel for them. You know, obviously, this one of the strengths, I believe, is Alshon Jeffrey and the matchup problems that he could pose to, like I mentioned already, in Eagles, defensive secondary, rather, you know, the corner position where they're a little bit thin right now. So that'd be the big concern for the Eagles heading into that week. For pointing out, you know, kind of, I don't know if you want to call it a weakness, but certainly, you know, not a big strength for the Bears. For me, it'd be their pass rush. I took a quick look at you know, the front seven today, and I think it was they have their starting front seven, I believe, has 29 combined years of experience and something like 70 career sacks or something like that. So, like, they don't really have much in the way of proven pass rusher on that defensive front seven, which I think kind of bodes well in terms of a team that's putting out a start, you know, a rookie quarterback that's only going to be starting his second game. So I think the Eagles are kind of fortunate, A, to get a Browns defense week one, but also didn't really have a proven pass rusher, and he had a lot of time to work and kind of wasn't under pressure a whole lot that first week. And then, you know, week two, he's going against the Bears team that, you know, again, like I just don't see a pass rusher there with a lot of proven experience. You know, that Willie Young is a guy that I thought the Eagles might target in free agency, and, you know, it didn't go that way. Also was a former Jim Schwartz guy in his own right. But, yeah, it's a defense that I think kind of bodes well for, you know, again, a team that's trying to get their second start out of their rookie.
Yeah, yeah. So, well, I think the one thing we can all agree on, Jimmy, is let's hope that Bears-Eagles is much more entertaining than Rams-49ers.
It's not a very high bar there, but yes, I agree.
That's what we do. All right, Jimmy Kemsky, go check out his stuff at Philly Voice. Follow him on Twitter throughout the week. Jimmy, thanks so much for the time.
Appreciate it, guys.
Big thank you again to Jimmy Kemsky. Again, he is a fun Twitter follow. Reminded me that Malcolm Jenkins was on the Eagles that I knew about, but I kind of forgot about how good Malcolm Jenkins is. But that's where the Eagles have a strength there in the safeties. And a couple things that Jimmy and I didn't really talk about from the Bears perspective, I wanted him to give the listeners the Eagles perspective. I want you guys to learn about this Philadelphia Eagles team, get to know more about the team the Bears are facing Monday night. In just a minute, John and I are going to get into the Bears perspective of this matchup. But first, we got to talk about Loot Crate. It's our sponsor this week. Go to lootcrate.com/Shaw and use our promo code Shaw, S-H-A-W, and get $3 off your first crate. You're asking, what is in a crate? Let me tell you, you only have a few more days to get September's crate, which the theme is speed. Who's got the need for speed? We're talking Iron Man, Batman, Gone in 60 Seconds. But John, Mario Kart. I think there might be some Mario Kart apparel potentially in some of these crates. That is maybe my favorite video game of all time.
Does the lightning bullet come in the crate? I would love that.
Maybe that's part of the shirt or the mug or whatever it is, but you can get it if you get one of these loot crates and go ahead and subscribe to this great service. $20 a month, less than $20 a month, you get all these items, and $3 off, use our promo code Shaw. I know Dan and I talked about characters last week, but John, I think Mario Kart, for me at least, was a very big, important part of college, because once you get good at Mario Kart, you start to, you know, get a little more respect in the freshman dorm room.
So I was just out of school when Mario Kart came out on the Wii. So we played it a lot with some adult beverages and really had a nice time. My personal favorite was Baby Mario. I don't know about you, but I loved doing the Baby Booster.
See, we were strictly Nintendo 64. We were strictly old school.
Wow.
Yeah, running it back old school. And that was the way to go. And I will still, you know, jump on a little Mario Kart if someone's got an N64. And my roommate and I, a couple years ago, we had, you know, just kind of found an N64. And it was almost like a nightly activity. And kind of we wondered why we were both single still at that time.
You know, my sister, who recently moved out of her apartment into another apartment, found our old N64 and just dropped that off for me with Mario Kart. So I have actually been playing that a little bit on the N64.
Oh, there you go. Thanks for inviting me over. You have not done that.
You're going to come out to Sycamore?
Yeah, maybe. For Mario Kart, I might. Okay. Speaking of Mario Kart and the need for speed, which, by the way, go use our promo code Shaw, lootcrate.com/Shaw. I saw it was a recent anniversary for Sega Dreamcast.
I never got into Dreamcast.
15-year anniversary. And that was one of those things, I think I got it when it came out, thought it was really cool. and they had a little screen within your controller. So if you had that, you could call plays on NFL 2K on your controller so your opponent couldn't see it on the screen.
Okay, that I think is an advantage, but man, I never got into the little screen with Dreamcast.
Yeah, I mean, it was a cool development, but of course, like N64, which came before that, you could do that on Blitz all the time and hide in your play. So it wasn't, but I will say Dreamcast was one of those I also got back into in college, and would play the NFL 2K. Randy Moss was pretty much unstoppable.
I feel like John Fox would love the little screen. Just to be able to hide something.
I don't think it'd be enough for him.
It's a screen, but you know, it's not enough.
I also loved how the Bears haven't updated their depth chart, so Cody Whitehair is still listed as a backup center to Ted Larson. So I'm sure Doug Peterson is very nervous to see who's going to be snapping the ball on Monday night. But
maybe the Eagles could do what Colorado did this week. Ooh, they're playing Michigan and started using movie characters and like famous pop culture characters on Michigan's depth chart because Jim Harbaugh doesn't issue a depth chart.
All right, before we get into the Bears-Eagles matchup a little bit more, I just want a quick backtrack. Your favorite course on N64 Mario Kart?
Ooh, that's tough. What's your favorite?
So I always liked Calamari Desert, and the reason is because I knew a cheat that like not a lot of people knew, and it was kind of an annoying cheat, but when I got it and I did it, I would usually win, and it was kind of entertaining.
Was it the train tracks?
Yeah, the train tracks.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I like that. I like the ice one. I don't remember what it's called, but that was probably my favorite.
All right. Okay. Now, that's not why you called. Let's get to Bears, Eagles, and what, as good as Carson Wentz played, looked everything last week against Cleveland, and I think go watch those touchdown passes he threw to Nelson Aguilar, Jordan Matthews. I mean, he dropped that in the bucket.
Legit
those were just
throws.
Absolute dimes to those guys who are quality receivers. We just haven't seen enough of them with the way the offense was in Philadelphia last year. So, and look, I mean, we had him, Pro Football Weekly, we had him ranked as our top quarterback heading into the draft, and I think the Wentz-Goff conversation continues when you look at where Jared Goff is right now in his development. Here's the thing, though, John. That was against the Cleveland Browns defense, okay? It was at home. Now, here comes Carson Wentz to Chicago, Monday Night Football. So his first game on primetime. And it's Vic Fangio. And, you know, this is an improved defense, but this is one of those games where you don't like to do this too often during the season. But when I was making my pick, and we'll get to our picks at the end of the show, I couldn't stop thinking about the Fangio factor and the type of the ways that the Bears could get after Carson Wentz are going to be different than what Cleveland did. And I think that is such an important advantage for the Bears heading into this game, even though Carson Wentz looked pretty good in his opener.
And it's not just the Fangio factor. It's now there's tape on Carson Wentz. That's the big difference between week one and week two. Now there's tape, and the Bears are at home. They're not going up against what I think is a pretty darn good offense in Houston. They're going up against an offense that looked good, but like you said, at home against Cleveland, and now Vic Fangio has a week's worth of tape on Carson Wentz.
And when you look to, I think, as I mentioned with Jimmy, I think the strength of that team is the offensive line. So I'd like to see, you know, some creative looks. And I know Vic Fangio is not a blitz guy, but when they did blitz with Danny Trevathan, they got a sack on third down. And that eventually led to getting points at the end of the half. You look at, they showed blitz in the second half, and that led to the Will Fuller touchdown on the screen. So I would imagine maybe we'll see some more exotic looks just because, you know, they're playing an Eagles offense. I think they can do that against. The other thing too, John, is I think sense of urgency is going to come into play. And go to our website and check out Morning Bears for September 14th. And I talked about this, and everyone should know the stat. We're talking 12% of teams that start 0-2 make the playoffs since 1990. Everyone... We get that stat this time of year all the time. And last year, the Seahawks and the Texans rallied back from 0-2 starts. If the Bears start 0-2, this Bears team, that is a young, rebuilding team that doesn't have a ton of talent, you start 0-2, You really have your backs against the wall if you want to try to make a miraculous run at the postseason. I think John Fox has to be aware of that. Vic Fangio, the players have to be aware about that. The other factor, John, when you're talking about intangibles, things that aren't X's and O's, this Bears team has not won a game at Soldier Field, regular season or preseason, mind you, since October 4th of last year. They were abysmal at home last season. So I think that you have to take into account a sense of urgency for this team. And they're not going to want to buy into it. They're going to want to say it's at any other game. But if you're the Bears, you almost got to call this a must-win game when you put in those two things together, like with your home crowd and not wanting to start 0-2.
Yeah, the Bears were an unthinkable 1-7 at Soldier Field last year. So yeah, there's got to be a sense of urgency, not just wanting to avoid an 0-2 start, but I mean, you don't want to get beat in your home opener where you were terrible last year against a rookie quarterback. I mean, there's a certain level of pride there, isn't there?
Oh yeah, there is. And I'm going to I would check out by the numbers on chicagobears.com. My friend Eli Cabron went in depth about how poorly rookie quarterbacks have fared at Soldier Field. So check that out, because it's, you know, and again, you can't put history into it too much because this is a brand new team, brand new schemes, but it's just a reminder, it's not easy to win games when you're a rookie quarterback. It might be easy when you're at home and playing the Browns, but when you're on the road under the lights, it's going to be a good atmosphere, I would imagine, at Soldier Field. You know, even if the team is 0-1, even if there's not excitement about this team, it's the first game of the season. There's still some hope, I would imagine, and that's going to come into play, certainly. And I think, too, I mentioned this to Jimmy, I think that the wide receivers the Bears have are going to have an advantage over Philadelphia's cornerbacks. It's just making sure Jay Cutler has time. And you give Whitehair sitting long another week together, I think this offensive line is going to look much more improved. And maybe the Bears can get into one of those games where they can run the ball 30, 35 times like they probably wanted to against Houston. So I wonder if we see more running ball, maybe some Kadeem Carey, maybe even some Jordan Howard. I'd be curious to see what their plan is with Jordan Howard. And John, you're a big fantasy guy, so I feel like there may be some folks, when the Bears drafted Jordan Howard, thinking about him for fantasy purposes. I kind of knew all along that it was going to take a lot of time. I think the question is, how long do the Bears keep him on the sideline before kind of at least bringing him in to change as a change of pace guy?
So the term that gets used in fantasy is market share, but really it's percentage of snaps. And Jeremy Langford saw the second highest percentage of snaps of any running back in the National Football League in week one. The only guy that was higher was David Johnson. So I think if you're looking for Jordan Howard, if you're looking for Kadeem Carey, you may see them Monday night, but not to the level that I think people have in mind. This is Jeremy Langford's show. He proved that in the preseason, and I think you saw that in week one where Langford was basically the only running back on the field for the Bears.
Yeah, and that didn't surprise those of us who have been around the team all summer or have been, you know, even following the team. I think he deserves it. I don't think it's been given to him. I think he has earned it with the way he's played and with his skill set and what he can do compared to Carey. And of course, Jordan Howard being a rookie, it's going to take him some time. But, you know, Langford admitted he left some yards on the field and he's going to need to be a little stronger in terms of trying to break some of those tackles. The Eagles are not that strong necessarily in the second level. If he can get past that first group, the defensive line, let's see what he can do on Monday night. John, I like to give folks kind of one thing to watch, one player to focus on in the upcoming Bears game. How about Zach Miller for this game? Because we didn't see much of Zach Miller against Houston. I think that one of the plays I highlighted in our All 22 slideshow, which is up at profootballweekly.com/Bears, that third down play when Jay Cutler got sacked by John Simon, Zach Miller was coming across the field on a drag and actually looked like he would have been wide open for a nice gain. Of course, Cutler did not have the time to get him the ball. We know what Zach Miller can do as a receiver. I like to see if they try to open things up a little bit more for him. Maybe the threat of Jeffrey or Eddie Royal or Kevin White sets up some things for Zach Miller, or at least getting the Bears to the red zone where they can use him as well, because I think that's a guy to kind of keep an eye on against Philadelphia.
For me, and really I think this is a question for you, who matches up against Jordan Matthews? Because he looked pretty darn good for the Eagles in week one.
Yeah, I think you Tracy Porter. I mean, Tracy Porter, I think, is just going to be your guy all year long to go against the other team's number one receiver. And look, Matthew's got 14 targets, so that tells me he is the guy compared to Nelson Aguilar. And Tracy Porter, the interception over DeAndre Hopkins. Look, the touchdown Hopkins got was a ridiculous throw and catch. I mean, Porter was not in bad coverage on that play.
Yeah, there's nothing you can do about that.
No, and I think he did a pretty nice job. And you know what? Credit to Jacoby Glenn. He did miss a tackle on one Will Fuller play, but Glenn and DeAndre Hall, I thought, were fine too. And again, DeAndre Hall was in great position to make a play on that long throw to Fuller, and that was another perfect pitch and catch. So I imagine all season long we're going to see Porter going up against the best receivers. We'll talk about it next week when Porter's going to, you know, go against Dez Bryant. And it's just going to continue, you know, and that's just the type of guy he has been. It's not because he is the fastest and the most physical, but he just is that smart and that technique sound that the Bears can trust him. And the hope is now that he's able to stay healthy all season long.
Yeah, I think with the way Porter played, I agree. He looked really darn good. So when Porter's healthy, and we've said this on the podcast a number of times, that's not a guarantee. But when Porter's healthy, I think he stabilizes the Bears secondary a little bit.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Are you ready for your game pick, John?
I think I am. I look at this as a low scoring game, to be honest with you. I think that both defenses are going to come out with a decent game plan. I think Carson Wentz is going to struggle on the road. And I think the Eagles, if they're smart at least, are going to try and take away Alshon Jeffrey and say, okay, beat us with somebody else. So I think the Bears come away with this, but I think it's low scoring. I've got Bears 17, Eagles 13.
Wow, okay, so that means you also have the Bears covering.
I do, yeah.
3-point spread, so essentially even. Give them the 3 points at home. Let me give folks at home Hub Arkish's pick. He's got Bears 24, Eagles 20. Fangio, Bears D, breakout, blitz, Carson Wentz, Wiltz. Cutler and Jeffrey put on a Monday night show. Says Hub Arkish, looking at our 10 picks in the Pro Football Weekly insert, only two writers, John Steiff and Kyle Neighbors, picked the Eagles. I went with the Bears. I went other side, John. I actually went high scoring. I went Bears 27, Eagles 26. So I did give the Eagles a backdoor cover. Man, I was wondering if the Bears were going to get one of those backdoor covers on that final drive last week. But the reason I'm going high scoring is I think that the way the offenses can go, I think it's not so much it's going to be a shootout. I just don't have a ton of confidence in the Eagles defense. I think the Eagles are going to be able to get theirs every once in a while. And I do think it's going to be a close game. You know, the Bears would prefer these games to be low scoring too. So I'm actually now, after listening to your reasoning, this is great. Host, listen to his producer. I kind of wish my score was lower.
Well, I mean, there are guys in good spots too to have good games. I think Jeremy Langford is one. I think if the Eagles do not try and at least bracket Jeffrey, he can go off. And I'm interested in see what Kevin White can do. And Jordan Matthews is I think a looking studly after week one. So we'll see.
All right, that'll do it, but let's give you a lot of plugs. Okay, first off, follow us on Twitter at Bears_Insider. Add us on Snapchat, Bears_Insider. We'll take you through the sights and sounds of Halas Hall this week. And, of course, Bears-Eagles Monday Night Football at Soldier Field. Get all of our content at profootballweekly.com/Bears. Thursday, pick up your Sun Times, Daily Herald, Northwest Herald, the Chronicle in DeKalb, Kane County Chronicle, tons of papers around Illinois. Get our Pro Football Weekly insert, full matchup preview, and a lot more, some fantasy stuff as well to get you set for week two in the NFL. Saturday, 10:30 in the morning, WCIU, the U, Chicago Football Now, Hub, Arthur, and I preview Bears Eagles. And also, we talk St. Rita versus Mount Carmel. I went out to St. Rita on Monday, talked to some of their players and coaches about getting revenge on Mount Carmel. Great high school rivalry. So tune in for that 10:30 on WCIU. Big thank yous to pass along. Of course, my producer doing it solo today, John Solly. John, thank you very much. This was a wonderful show.
Kevin, thank you very much for all that you do for Pro Football Weekly.
I try. And then, of course, a big thank you to Jimmy Kemsky, Eagles writer for Philly Voice, who is our Behind Enemy Lines guest. So for everyone here at Shaw Media, Pro Football Weekly, that does it for this edition of the Chicago Football Podcast. Be sure to check out all of our stuff at profootballweekly.com/Bears. We got a Monday night game and more Bears talk next week.